The investigation, the sort of official and unofficial investigations into state capture continue. The Zondo Commission of Inquiry starts sitting soon. That's got just over a couple of years to go through all of the evidence which is going to be placed before it. And there is also informal, in the sense of not state sanctioned, not government sanctioned and funded, but the incredible work being done by the Scorpio and Amabungani investigative units. Susan Comrie is a journalist at Amabungani and is the author of yet another very disturbing story because of the amounts of money involved and the lack of controls that should have been in place to prevent the movements of this money, the Trojan horse that wheeled 600 million rand out of state-owned entities. Susan Comrie, good afternoon.
Hi, John.
Susan, these are very complicated stories. There are lots of moving parts and there are lots of numbers. But I know, having spoken to you a couple of times before, that you have an enviable ability to put these complicated matters in a way that a radio audience can understand. So over to you. What's the sort of core, the kernel of the story?
Sure. I mean, well, this is really a story about how Salim Essa and the Guptas were able to convert their political connections into cash. I mean, we often say that people are politically connected, but what really matters is what they do with those connections. And what we can really see here is that they were able to use those connections to cream a massive amount of money off consulting contracts with state-owned entities. So we're talking about Transnet, SAA, SA Express, Dunnell, and a Transnet pension fund, at very least. And what they were sort of able to do was by acting as, I mean, effectively fixers, but they like to call themselves business development partners, for a company called Regiment Capital. You know, between Regiment and McKinsey, the two of them teamed up, and at Transnet alone, you know, during this period, they received contracts worth around 1.5 billion rand from Transnet. Now, a significant portion of that was busy being siphoned out through the back door from regiments and being given to this sort of collection of what we call letterbox companies, companies that don't really exist except as a bank account and sometimes, you know, a PO box address. And all in all, we know that these companies, we've seen invoices totaling around 600 million rand over those 3 years.
Okay, and why through the back door? Why not straight into the Essa and Gupta bank accounts? That's to add a layer of subterfuge.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there would have been a lot of questions asked if you saw, you know, we're talking about, so a company like Regiments would receive their fee up to 55%, sometimes even more of that fee would be taken and would be paid to these companies. Now, I think if it was well known that Essa and the Guptas were taking these huge fees, then people might have stopped to say, well, hang on a sec, what's going on? Why are they getting these contracts? Why are they amassing this sort of collection? We've identified about 9 different letterbox companies that they've used, that all seem to have kind of ghost directors. You know, they pop up, they take 50 million at a time, and then they close again a few months later, and a new one replaces it. So it's this kind of roving sort of money laundering network.
Was there value given at all for this? The fact that the contracts were obtained because of political connections, I think that is unarguable. The fact that the contract prices were inflated above what would have been charged if this were open in a proper competitive bidding process, that I think also is inarguable, but were unarguable. Was there any value given to these SOEs through the connection with this business development partner?
Sure. I mean, so the consultants were there. I mean, there was a huge number of consultants from McKinsey and from Regiment that were at these SOEs delivering consulting services. So in that sense, there was value created in that way. But as you say, you know, when amounts of the scale are being taken off those contracts, so where, for instance, you know, if regiments would get half of the value of the contract, sort of up to 55% of regiments' fee was going to Salim Essa and the Guptas. Now, from what we can tell, the letterboxes, they provided no service beyond the political connections that they were able to leverage. Now, I don't know if one could put a reasonable cost on doing that. I mean, the question that we have always had and we've asked repeatedly is, you know, how does this square with, you know, Section 217 of the Constitution that requires that tenders are open, that they're fair, that they're competitive, that SOEs get the best, you know, price for the service that's being delivered. I mean, I think we've seen a number of instances here where prices were intentionally inflated just to make sure that the pool of money was bigger, so that the amount that was going to Selene Esser and the Gupta's would be bigger.
Is this an issue of corporate governance, or is it an issue for the courts? I mean, you mentioned a section of the Constitution suggesting what they were doing was unconstitutional, and if something is unconstitutional, I presume it is also illegal.
Sure. Well, look, there have to be questions asked about how those contracts were awarded. You know, billions of rands worth of contracts being awarded from SOEs. So that's one layer that needs to be confronted. I think, you know, what we're seeing here is, you know, when you have someone who's being paid huge commissions of a contract, tens of millions of rands a month, and they're not providing any viable service, and they're essentially there because they're politically connected, because of their connections, it doesn't, it's not definitive proof of corruption. One needs to close the loop and to find out what those people within the SOEs were getting in return for their cooperation. But it certainly is quite strong evidence to say, you know, this looks largely like a kickback scheme. It looks largely like a scheme to say, you know, give us the contract and we'll channel these monies out the back door. I mean, unfortunately, because the letterbox companies, because it is effectively a laundry network, the few instances where we know where money went on, it looks very much like it enters into a sort of a hawala system, an informal banking system, and we suspect that a large amount of that money actually left the country.
Susan Comrie, thank you very much. Investigative journalist at Amabungani.